Welcome to PRN's Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lenman. My guest is Rodney Shakespeare. Rodney, I know you have a checklist of topics to discuss, and I love the way you compile it, and I look forward to a very, very riveting hour going through all of these things. And I've said it before in other programs, I think we're on the same page on just about everything you have on your list. And the only reason I say just about everything is you may have an issue I haven't really addressed, so I'm looking forward to something I haven't written about. It may give me meat for a future article.
Okay, Steve. I'd just like to start by observing that I come across you in various broadcasting situations. And have I got this right? Were you broadcasting at 3 a.m. or 4 a.m. this morning? Have I got that right?
Press TV had me on very, very early this morning.
What is early? What time is early?
Oh, gee, I forget the exact time, but...
It was either 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock, according to my calculations.
I think it was around 4 a.m. It was around 4 a.m. It was on the... Yeah, I think it was 4 a.m. It was on the news program.
Yes.
And they surprised me with the topic, talking about Pakistan launching a nuclear missile with a range, I think, of 1,500 kilometers, something like that, and wondering whether this shows belligerence with India. And my comments basically were, I'm not concerned about an Indian-Pakistani conflict. I'm concerned about what my own country, Washington, and what Israel does, what both of these countries do. These are the issues to worry about. We haven't seen a Pakistani-Indian conflict in many, many years, and Pakistan launching a missile capable of holding a nuclear warhead absolutely is not a cause for any conflict between the two countries. India does the same thing.
Yeah, yes, though I've just observed that there is, of course, the Kashmir situation.
Oh, yeah.
That was quite disgraceful. The British Empire allowed the Maharaja of Kashmir to take the decision, and he took the decision against the will of the majority of his own people. That was in the independence negotiations, 1947-48. Now, Steve, I want to start today by asking you a nasty, spiteful question. Brace yourself. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
What's the weather like in Chicago at this moment?
Well, it's getting cold. It's getting cold.
It's getting cold. And it's another polar vortex. And you had one not long ago, which was breaking the records. This one is getting near breaking some of the records. I want to remind everybody, for starters, of the words in one of the James Bond book, which was that... Once happens is coincidence, the second time is happenstance, and when you get a third sort of polar vortex, you can no longer blame it on global warming, and you can no longer start cheating by changing your vocabulary and saying it's climate change. The fact of the matter, it really does look as though there is change, but that change is going in the direction of at least a substantial pause and probably reversal into a global cooling. Okay, Steve. Now, I wonder now, turn if I may, to a program that I'm doing tomorrow with a most remarkable woman, and it is a subject, which is, the subject is USS Liberty, which was a spy ship attacked by Israel on June the 8th, 1967. And Steve, the 8th of June is my birthday. And if anybody does... Yes. Well, you put in your diary. But do anything nasty on my birthday, and I get upset about it. My guest is a most remarkable person. She started out as a beauty queen, and then she's become a garden designer and a filmmaker. But she's actually the most courageous woman, I say, in the world, particularly on one issue. There's a whole range of issues she fights the battle. And that is that she points to the existence of a country which is five times larger than Switzerland, and that this country is at peace. No one's got any arguments with it. It exists on the borders of between Russia and China, and it was conceived and created and has been in existence since 1928. Its name is Borobudur. And the point about it is the homeland for Jews. And if you look at the original Theodor Herzl, when he was going for a Jewish state, there were various places like Patagonia was raised and Uganda was raised. And then the Jews actually got their land in 1928. And there is that land today. And there would be no troubles at all if it was treated as what it is, a Jewish homeland. But you never hear a mention of it on any of the mainstream media. And the point, Steve, is that this land does not take anybody else's land. There are no issues of occupation or of violence. And the whole thing seems to be peaceable. So whatever your view, well, I won't say whatever your view on the Palestine question, where, of course, which is the center of the violence in the Middle East, where Israel is occupying other people's lands, and it would seem is expanding forever, there does exist Birobidzhan. Now, my guest is Lady Michelle Renouf, and she does the Birobidzhan issue and makes films about it. But she's coming on tomorrow to talk about the USS Liberty. And viewers may or may not know that on the 8th of June, 1967, there was war in the Middle East that had already been started between Israel and the Arab countries. And Israel had most remarkable advances. And on the day in question, at 5 a.m. in the morning, Israeli planes were going over this ship. And they did it for several hours. Renaissance planes were going over, and the pilots were waving to the American sailors. And this ship was way out in the middle of international waters. Now, I spare you some of the next subsequent detail, except to say that the ship, not only were they all waving to each other, but the ship was displaying a huge American flag, and the letters, these great big letters, made it obvious an American ship, and the American Navy had refused any escort for this vessel on the grounds that it was so clearly identified and that no one could ever conceivably attack the thing. It was an American ship in international waters, being neutral, by the way, being neutral in the hostilities between the Arab nations and Israel. But what was going on?
I just wrote about this myself. Just about on the day, the anniversary of the day it happened, 8th of June indeed. And I must add, it was an Israeli war of aggression that Israeli generals admitted years after the fact that they made statements like, we ate the plan, we slept the plan, and there was no threat whatever from any of the Arab countries. And it literally was Israeli naked aggression against Arab countries. That war never should have happened, the so-called Six-Day War. And on the second day or so, Israel was the day that Israel attacked America.
Yes. But then what was really going on behind the scenes was that Israel essentially had won, and it then wanted to go on to attack and occupy the Golan Heights of Syria. And in order to do that, it had to ensure that America did not find out. And therefore, the spy ship, the communication ship, which was the USS Liberty, was going to be attacked. And they did attack it. They attacked it with cannon, then with napalm, and then they came along with torpedo boats. Five torpedoes were fired, and only one of them hit. And then when people were in the life rafts, without any doubt, they committed a war crime. If you machine gun life rafts, you cannot argue that that was a mistake. They, of course, all along they were claimed that it was a mistake that they attacked this American ship. They did it deliberately. And then the American government, at first President Johnson, a supporter of Israel, in fact, a hardline supporter, he actually proposed that he knew this is an attack. He actually proposed doing something about it. But then the powerful Zionist lobbies in America, by a mixture, the usual mixture, blackmail, bribery, threats, and money for the political system, they succeeded in stopping that protest, with the consequence that ever since that day, Steve, Israel knows it can do anything it likes to America and will get away with it. And of course, next time they were murdering Americans was 9/11, when 3,000 of them were murdered. So 1967 is really the issue which should wake up the American public to what their relationship is with Israel, and that Israel is the tail that wags the dog, and that Israel can murder Americans and get away with it because the American political structure, I'm sorry to say, like the British political structure, is largely, if not completely, controlled by Zionism.
Rodney, I think your point is extremely important, that Six-Day War and the fact that Israel got away with murdering U.S. sailors on the USS Liberty and the U.S. government did absolutely nothing about it. Israel knew it could do any damn thing it wanted, and it has done anything it wanted ever since to this very day.
Yes, it does. It, without any doubt, it goes back to 1967, which is why the subject's so important. Okay, Steve, now moving on to the control of Israel over the political system in America, look at what is happening on the talks between the P5 plus one countries with Iran. All the American intelligence agencies, the 16 of them, for years say that Iran is not building a bomb. Iran is not building a bomb. At this very moment, I'm talking today, the IAEA is saying, oh dear, we've made some mistakes in our calculations. The whole thing has been a propaganda operation. The USA basically refusing to speak properly to anybody who dared to take away American property. That was in 1979. And just in the same way, the Americans have never forgiven Cuba. So it goes on and on. But the rest of the world wants to now make a sensible, straightforward arrangement with Iran. But what is the USA doing? What is Obama doing? They have actually, but coming to the point where negotiations could just about make it, they've renewed the sanctions against Iran. I have to say, Steve, go back to 2009 when Obama, in writing, gave to the president of Brazil, that was Lula, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. And he and the president of Turkey, they linked up with Ahmadinejad of Iran, and they agreed to give what America had asked for in that letter, which was the export of the enriched uranium outside Iran, probably to Russia, there it to be turned into fuel rods and then brought back into Iran. And immediately America got what it had asked for in writing. Goodness me, America torpedoed that agreement. So I have to tell you now that nobody in their right mind is trusting a word of what the Americans are up to. Even if they agree something now, they can't be trusted at all. But they're not going to agree anything, Steve. Put that up on the wall, please. They're not going to agree because the bottom line about this has been a shift in American politics to the control in your political institutions, with the consequence that Obama is now not just a lame duck. He's basically lost all his cards, and he isn't going to stand up against the Zionists who want to have a fight, even a war with Iran. And Steve, Ukraine is bad enough as to what's going on there. More people have been killed there than in Gaza. But you've got this one with Iran, because if Obama did make an agreement, you've still got the Israelis looking for a chance to go to a war. So what do you say on that? And what do you say very quickly on Ukraine, just for the moment? Then we'll move on.
Well, I just wrote two articles on the Iranian so-called P5 plus one talks, and one of them, what was my title? U.S. sabotaging talks with Iran. Yeah, I agree with you, Rodney. I think the fix is in, and no matter what Iran agrees to, the bar will be raised and the talks will be sabotaged. And then I make a statement, I believe, that even if there's an agreement, it'll be a fake agreement, because agreements America comes up with aren't worth the paper they're written on. and they'll be violated, and Iran will be blamed. America will be the violator. Iran will be blamed for America's transgressions, and the idea of a durable resolution ending 35 years of hostility, irresponsible years of hostility, it simply won't happen. I don't expect it. I would say it would be a major miracle if something like that happens, and I absolutely don't believe it will. As far as Ukraine goes, the fascist government in Kiev that Washington elevated to power bears full Washington bears full responsibility for what's going on, but its puppets in Ukraine bear responsibility for waging naked aggression, coming up with two agreements last April in Geneva, a second one in Minsk in September, actually two agreements in Minsk, a protocol, and then a follow-up memorandum a couple of weeks after that, basically renouncing conflict, agreeing to peaceful conflict resolution, and straight away, in both cases, the Kiev government violated the agreement, and war continues unabated since last April, blamed irresponsibly on the people I call freedom fighters in eastern, southeastern Ukraine, who only want what everybody deserves, democratic rights, Rodney, and of course, the hardline government in Kiev absolutely refuses to give it to them, and Washington provides full support and encouragement to their worst crimes.
Yes, and we mustn't forget that the real thrust in this situation was the movement in Kiev, basically to get rid of the language of people in the East, and indeed to put their lives at risk. Keeping the still with Israel, since I was last with you, the ICC, and here I'm not completely clear on whether the ICC has legal authority, but it has decided not to get involved in any way with Israel over the events in 2010 on that ship, the Mare Marmara.
Yes.
You may remember that these were ships which were totally unarmed, and they were bringing medicines from Cyprus into Gaza, the eastern end of the Mediterranean. Whereupon long came the attack boats, and then the helicopters, and down came the Israeli commandos, and they shot 8 Turks and 1 American, and they were shot at short range or in the back of their head when they were lying on the ground. There were no guns or anything like that on the ship. This was a war crime, but the International Criminal Court says that this is not sufficient gravity to justify any sort of action, which leaves the question of what about Gaza, where you've got, was it 2,200 killed and 10,000 blown in half? Do you think the ICC will agree to take on Israel for events in Gaza? Well, I'm afraid that that's going to probably be stopped by the USA veto. So it's all cynical, hypocritical stuff. But that little one, you could say it's little, and it's 9 people who were just executed. Very like ISIS. You lie them on the ground, and then you shoot them in the back of the head. Israel and ISIS do seem to have a lot in common. See, unless you want to comment on that, I'll be moving on.
We can go to the next topic, but I certainly agree with everything you said, Rodney.
Okay. Mentioning ISIS, I want to comment on what Obama is up to yesterday and today in respect of his statements. And he's saying that if the USA is to get rid of ISIS, and we do have to remember that it created ISIS with Saudi Arabia and with the Israelis, and I'll come to the Israelis in a minute. He's saying that they have to get rid of Assad. But just think that the only solid ones who have never been in favor of ISIS, I name them, are the Assad government, whether you like it or not, Hezbollah, whether you like it or not, and Iran. And isn't it strange that all three of those America wants to destroy because America's controlled by Zionism? So America is now in a right mess. It's now changing its line again, as it was sort of moving a bit to help with Assad. It's now saying they want Assad wiped out. And what will then happen in Syria? But of course, the whole thing will be handed, in practice, will be handed over to ISIS, because the so-called moderates don't stand a chance. They get, whenever they get armed, they get defeated, they betray their, whatever they're meant to be doing. What is this about? Well, some Chinese hackers have just discovered the clearest evidence that Mossad and ISIS are hand in glove. And of course, at this moment, the borders between the Golan Heights, which are occupied by Syria, and the ISIS areas and entry into Syria, the Israelis are facilitating it. So you've got the most extraordinary thing is that taking great risk, but Israel and the USA in practice are ending up manipulating and trying to destroy one way or another Iran. They're not going to do a deal with Iran. They hate Hezbollah. And, of course, they're trying to destroy the Assad government, all in the name of opposing ISIS. But, of course, the truth is they're doing everything they can to keep it in existence. One of the nations keeping ISIS in existence is Saudi Arabia. And, Steve, there's nothing new in what I say now. And it is this. Did you know that the Saudi Arabians are destroying yet another historical building? I believe this one is the presumed birthplace of Muhammad, peace be upon him. And you just think, what would be the situation if one wants to destroy the presumed birthplace of, say, Jesus Christ or something like this? But this is the Saudis for you. They are absolute monsters. They are the bigots, and they are behind the vicious ideology, and they are destroying their own culture. Such is the narrow-mindedness and the bigotry of the Saudis. So there you are, Steve. Come in and comment on that, or we can just be moving on to other subjects.
Well, I have nothing good to say about the Saudi Arabian regime, and I would say the only one that exceeds it in ruthlessness, in my opinion, is Israel. Saudi Arabia may persecute its own people. They may support America's imperial wars. They may launch token airstrikes in support. Not really much of anything, but we both know what Israel does, Rodney. I mean, literally nonstop genocidal activities against the Palestinian people. I call it slow-motion genocide that's been going on for something like 67 years, something like that. I mean, that's a pretty horrendous record. So in the region, nobody matches Israel's ruthless record, and I certainly write an awful lot about it all the time.
Yes. Okay, now, one which is rising very, very, and this is the European view of things, one which is rising very, very fast in the, I don't know, the infamous stakes is the situation in Spain. Listeners will know about the vote in Catalonia that's centered around Barcelona, where about 80% of those who voted wanted some sort of independence or some sort of change. And they will know that that area, Catalonia, it has an independent history. It got up to all sorts of things in the Spanish Civil War. It's also now perhaps the most prosperous part of Spain, and it's significant that in Italy, that Veneto, that is also another area wanting some sort of independence. But the issue about Spain goes, and Catalonia goes, much, much wider. You, on the one hand, you look at the Spanish situation, where the unemployment is officially around about 25%, and overall about 50% for young people 18 to 25. And then in some parts in the south, in Granada, it's 70% unemployment, and even those with jobs have no security. The consequence now is one of the most remarkable political rises, perhaps in the world. Only about 3 or 4 months ago, a party called Podemos, which is Latin for, it is Spanish. And no, actually, it's probably Latin. We won't go into that. It is probably Spanish for we are able. So yes, we can would be the interpretation. That party has moved from 8% in 3 or 4 months, right up to 25%. And it's now right out there with 25% in the UK Protest Party, which is UKIP, and right up there with 25% with the Front National in France, and right up there with around about 25% with the Five Star Movement in Italy. And goodness me, similar things in Greece and rising in Germany. In other words, it's part of this great movement. Doesn't mean to say they have any solutions, but this great movement of protest against the economic situation and the political situation. Well, in Spain, though, it's got a sort of a big local twist, because on top of the economic disaster and the unemployment, you have corruption. So much so that they've invented a new game. It's called Corruptopolis. So I take it. And in the game, each player has to provide a convincing explanation of how a certain amount of cash from a corruption situation ended up in their bank account. Think of the wonderful sort of games that you could play on that one, Steve. I suppose you start by claiming that you won it on the horses. That's usually the first one. But Spain, its corruption is hitting right the way through the whole of the political and social structure. The royal family is deeply involved. The big companies. I found a figure somewhere of questions. One of the members of the royal family was asked more than 550 times a question, to which the negative answer came in, "I don't know, I can't recall," etc., etc., when it was questioned about a shell company run by her husband. I suppose since she's the wife, one could say, well, maybe she didn't know one way or another. But if someone is asking her 550 times, they probably are onto something. And those events now are running right the way through Spanish politics. And I think you can guarantee that Podemos is going to create a revolution in Spain, because the Spaniards have had enough of it. So it's not just Catalonia. It's not just Benito. It's not just Scotland. And by Scotland, goodness me, coming back now, all those promises which the government made to the Scots, the UK government is breaking them all, Steve. Be sure of that. And the English MPs are stirring. And the effect's going to be of some very considerable political upheavals and disruption in our politics over the next 18 months in the UK. And all of it, Steve, every bit of it, is ultimately about economic failure on the grand scale.
Well, no surprise about breaking promises, Rodney. I mean, they're systematically broken. Certainly in America, the promises made, as I like to put it, aren't worth the paper they're written on or the words that are spoken. One thing is said and another thing entirely is done, and the people of Scotland won't get anything. Let's hope they have enough courage to come back and have a second referendum and really manage to break free. But I wonder what difference it would make, Rodney. You know, you throw out the British bums and you install the Scottish bums, and they end up with the same rotten system, and probably that's the way it could happen at some point in the future, and possibly the same thing could happen in Catalonia.
That is precise the point. Two or three days ago, I was at a meeting, and one of the subjects coming up was, what was the reason for the failure for the Arab Spring? And I pointed out that the real failure, why the Arab Spring has been manipulated, oppressed, misguided and misled, is that there is no coherent economic analysis plus associated measures around which people could rally and demand and get action. All they can do at the moment is to jump up and claim that there is a traditional Islamic economics which is effective, and it's not. That there is Islamic finance and banking, which is effective, all right, but it's just a rip-off for the Saudi plutocrats. It's basically what it gets down to. But because there is not a modern market economics dedicated to spreading productive capacity and therefore the income to every person in society, that must mean it can mean a job, or it can be in a small business, or it can be via share ownership, done over time, but using an interest-free supply purely for the practice of, for the policy of spreading productive capacity into the hands of everybody. But without that, there is no solution. And Steve, at this moment, we are still locked into the belief, which came from 1991 and the collapse of communism, that what exists is perfect and efficient. And the mass of people, Americans in particular at the moment, have no concept at all that there could be anything different. There is protest in your, there's no effective protest in America. Yes, there are great people. You are one, and there's Occupy Wall Street, and there are individuals, progressive radio, Democracy Now, Veterans Today. There are all sorts of little institutions, but the effective crux of American politics still isn't looking for something new. They may, I think, start to support a third candidate in the next presidential election in America, but I don't quite see where the new policy is coming from in America. But anyway, that's certainly the reason why the Arab Spring has got finished off virtually at the moment. There are signs that something may happen in Tunisia, particularly because some of the people involved in Tunisian politics were known for a period to be studying new ideas. But I'm very, very skeptical. It's not enough to throw out your government. You actually have to have something new and efficacious, which you are going to introduce instead. And all you've got in the USA at the moment is you've got the plunge protection team creating money and buying things up left, right, and center. And huge manipulations, for example, on, shall we say, another one at the moment is the price of gold. We've got the most extraordinary situation the world's ever known, is that something which is in huge demand, which is physical gold, is being whipped off to the east, left, right, and center, including Russia. Russian reserves are going up very, very sharply. And yet the price of gold is going down. And that is going down by this false manipulation of 100-to-1 paper contracts, where you and I agree to buy or sell gold and just exchange bits of paper without any intention of actually exchanging the gold. That manipulation has allowed the authorities to get away with what essentially is money printing and with assuring the public that everything is ultimately all right. That combined with the plunge protection team, and you've got a booming stock market. It is now higher. At the peak in 2007, it was about 40. It was just shy of 14,000, or maybe it touched 14,000. Well, now you're into touching 17,000, and the situation hasn't improved at all. The actual jobs haven't come back in America. They've only been the cheap jobs. People are being wiped out of your unemployment figures. The participation rate, it should be the one which decides whether America's economy is coming back. And that figure is dropping all the time. Rich-poor division continues. The debt is increasing. America is still expending all this money on its wars. Putting it all together, the situation is still building for that colossal collapse. And quite what will happen to the price of gold in the event of that collapse, I don't know. But I can say this, Steve, is that that price of gold is one of the huge manipulations of the situation. And it's taken the world away from reality. So I see nothing good in the economic situation at the moment. I think it's all very depressing and it's all getting worse and worse. And it's actually the situation is worse than what it was in August 2007. It was then, August 2007, when the first cracks appeared, which led to the first sign of the what I would call the downward lurch of an ongoing process, which is going to get worse and worse. Do you see any signs of recovery?
Oh, no, I think things are getting worse. As far as recovery goes, Europe is a mess. America is a mess. I talk all the time, or frequently, I should say, Rodney, about protracted mainstream Main Street depression conditions in America, with poverty levels, literally a growth industry, real unemployment, multiples higher than the official numbers, inflation much, much higher than the official numbers, all the numbers coming out of Washington, the economic, financial, labor numbers, all of them rigged to look better than they really are, and reality an absolute mess for most people. And this is the situation that millions of people face in America, and indeed across Europe, with a terrible situation. And the markets, as you mentioned the manipulating of the gold markets. All the markets are manipulated, and we're literally in nosebleed territory. At some day, there'll be a terrible day of reckoning arriving. I have no idea when or what will trigger it. I guess what can't go on forever won't, Rodney, and certainly what's going on now is going to have a very bad ending. I remember the late Bob Chapman, who used to be a regular guest on this program, sadly passed away a couple of years ago, and he mentioned that the longer this business goes on, the worse the crisis will be when it finally erupts. And I really wish that Bob were alive today to comment on what's going on now. He used to come on once a month like you, Rodney, and really explain things. He was a Wall Street insider. He came over to the other side, and he really understood things so well. I published a letter called The International Forecaster. It's still around, but without Bob, and again, I miss Bob terribly.
That was the most extraordinary, newsletter, which I used to read. There was more information in that newsletter than about 10 other letters put together.
Oh, indeed.
But he during the last part of his life, it was necessary that he should not disclose where he was. And there were issues that even with the telephone with him. And it just shows you that someone who stood up and stands the truth is taking risks with their lives one way or another. And Bob Chapman was aware of that. But
he was absolutely right, Roddy. He did not want me or my studio to call him. He wanted to call in from where he was, and again, it was a security issue, and that's exactly what he did. He called in for programs, and how he did it and so on, I don't know whether he had a secure phone or whatever, but he called in for every program.
Yes, and he would have called in, and then he would have done the program, and then he would have been disassociated from that telephone and would have moved on to somewhere. In other words, he would sort of contact you at this place for this telephone, and then disassociate himself from the telephone and move 20 miles further on. That would be the way that he would do it. And isn't it shameful that one should come to this? But this is where we are today. I mean, I don't have a mobile telephone simply because I think there are enough levers which the authorities have on you without giving them another one of being able to all the time trace exactly where you are.
Oh, indeed. I don't have one because I don't travel in my retirement. I would only make a rare trip. If I was traveling heavily the way I did in my former working life, I would have a cell phone, Rodney, but I have no need for one. And the old phone that I've had for the last 45 years serves me just fine. It lets me broadcast on air the way you and I are doing it right now, or call my friends, or call the grocery store, do anything I want. Very, very simple. The only thing I don't like is to have a the old rotary phone, I guess is what they called it, the one that I grew up with. I prefer a touch tone one, but I do remember the rotary phone. They're way back as a boy growing up, seemed awfully, awfully slow. I could dial a number on my phone now in the amount of time it took me just to get one digit on the old rotary phones. That's how slow they were.
Some of that old technology was absolutely delightful fun. The best bit of old technology, which I remember with great affection, was when I used to go to a shoe shop when I was a child, and you would put the shoes on, and then you would put your feet into sort of underneath a sort of table sort of thing, and then you would look down, and you would see a green picture of your toes and bones.
Oh, I know what you mean, yep.
And this, of course, was an X-ray machine.
Yeah.
And we would stare at our feet, and we would say, no, 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 the shoes don't fit me. And then we'd go along, and we'd have another shoe put on, and we'd put it on and stare again at our feet. And goodness knows how much X-rays went through. I have no idea, but that was the old technology. Now, Steve, can I just turn to Mexico? Because I don't understand the relationship between America, Canada, and Mexico. I mean, is it this NAFTA agreement? Because look at what's happening. America is associated with a country where one of the local mayors, in cahoots with the local hoodlums, gives an instruction for 43 young people or students to be shot in the head exactly as the way Israel shoots people in the head, exactly in the same way as ISIS shoots them in the head. I mean, am I got this right? Is the USA, and were you in cahoots with Mexico? Why is Mexico, why is the USA, as it were, condoning, supporting, and why is the USA in cahoots on the drug issue? Because I think that has to be the ultimate explanation of it all, Steve. I don't understand relationships between the USA and Mexico. What do you say?
I guess there's a long-standing geopolitical relationship between the two countries. I mean, they share a large border, and if you go back in history, I don't know what the Mexicans have to say about it these days. But America, back in the middle of the 19th century, stole half the country. I guess that's no longer an issue anymore. It certainly would be for me. Of course, America stole America to begin with, and that's an issue for all Native Americans. But these things never get raised. But indeed, the Mexican government, extremely right-wing, and could go around murdering its people. And the drug issue is very, very big with, I imagine, the government and the police and so on in cahoots with the drug barons. And I guess the ones that go after are the ones that may not play ball with them the way they want them to. But it's a major, major industry. It's the same thing in Afghanistan. Before 9/11, the Taliban got rid of the poppy fields. And as soon as America came back in, they flourished again so that Afghanistan could produce enough opium to more than supply the world's demand for heroin, and that's the way the situation is today. And the only areas they would target for destruction would be areas that the Taliban control. But Afghanistan, I don't know what the numbers are currently, but basically Afghanistan supplies enough poppy fields to cover the world's supply for heroin. And again, nobody says a word about any of this stuff. Plus the fact that the war goes on interminably and will, whether America stays or leaves.
Yes, yes, indeed. Steve, I was did an interview on one station, and they've not actually broadcast the interview. It may be that it comes up. And I've wondered why, because, you see, it was the most difficult question. And I gave an answer which I believe to be true. And I'd be wondered to hear what you say. The question was, why is it that young people in the UK are going off to join with ISIS? And are they a risk when they come back home? So you see, it's not just about the military issue. It's about the issue of why young people suddenly feel that they have to go off and do something. And what I said is that I think it's an economic failure. I think that there's a complete spiritual failure when young people will go off and will support something which, on any common sense view, it has no economics, it has no morality, and all it has is a vague belief of glory in the life hereafter. It fits in with the self-righteous side of the human personality. He wants to say that they're right and everyone else is wrong. But, you know, taking this very serious, the British government is now trying to say, well, how is it that the thing has gone wrong and is getting actually worse? They were before, of course, they talked about education and giving money to what so-called moderates. But they are failing in the UK, and our young people are going off to join, and they are doing this willingly. And I mean, it's another issue when they come back and to start hacking people's heads off or something. They may or may not, but some have been disabused of what they've seen and have been wanting to come back with their heads in shame. But the real issue, Steve, is why is it that there's been complete and absolute failure? It has to be, I think, that they've lost any genuine humanity, That may be because young people today seem to spend a lot of their time on the internet. It could be that they've lost any sense of purpose. Is it that we're no longer teaching them any sort of honor or morality? Is it the behavior of their betters, which in the UK would be the, I want to say betters, but those who are richer, that would certainly be the banking sector. Our banks get fined every day now. I've lost track of the huge fines are being imposed. But Steve, they never go to prison, do they? Is it that the example of our politicians who've got their hands in the their noses in the trough? I don't know, but it looks to me a great failure. I pinned it as, firstly, as an economic failure. Secondly, a sense of not wanting to solve the thing for everybody and only thinking in terms of self. Thirdly, the strength of the belief that everything was hunky-dory and just Klingon and it would get right. And lastly, there are no simply inspiring leaders in our politics, absolutely nothing at all. But it was a very difficult question to answer, Steve, because you see, it's so important, and it does represent a failure, and it can lead, of course, to people coming back and hacking off people's heads.
You raise a topic that I've thought about, and I've asked myself, why do these young people want to go halfway across the world and wage war on somebody, whether they join ISIS or any other group? And I agree with you. I think it's a situation at home. It may be very similar to the reason why black youth or Latino youth in America join gangs, because they've given up on the U.S. system that does absolutely nothing for them other than persecute them and deprive them of things they feel entitled to, you know, not major handouts, but at least treat them like human beings, which doesn't happen. And I know from talking to people in Chicago alone that these people are brutalized by police in Chicago, and it's the same thing that happens in cities across America, big cities or small cities or towns, and they're absolutely fed up with this, so they look for an alternative. Well, at least joining a gang, you stay home, but it still mystifies me why these young kids want to go halfway around the world and join an organization and wage a war. What could they possibly get out of this other than having their heads blown off? So I still think about this and wonder, why are they doing it other than the immense frustration they feel and maybe intending to come back to wage holy war in their own country? I don't know. I would love to have a conversation in a very, very safe place with a couple of these people and just ask them, why on earth are you doing something like this?
Well, I think what they would say is, if they really thought about it, that they want to join a successful team. Young people always want to join a group or a team, and it's sort of like a primitive tribalism, and it's part of us, in all of us, and we extend, and we in our minds we go beyond. So I think they would say something which gives their life meaning and gives them identity. Because that has to be the psychological impetus as to why they do it. I mean, they must get something out of it, and it must, whether the meaning is specific or whether it's vague, but they would say that they think they're doing something worthwhile. They would say that they're proud to be doing or what they are doing. And so, Steve, I think you would get your answers. They would tell you just what I've said, but you're still left with the question is, well, where is it? Why is it they cannot get their identity and their satisfactions, their psychological satisfactions, and Steve, their material satisfactions, which are, of course, to do with income and employment, amongst other things. Why can't they get them in the first place? So I think, Steve, you would get an answer, but you would not have the underlying questions as to really why it happened in the first place. They would just say, I do it because they might say they do it because they're believing in God. I mean, I did an interview with Anjem Chowdhury, and his position all along was simply that he knew what God's will, and that if you followed him and went off and chopped heads, you were doing God's work. So you've got there perhaps a failure of conventional reason, for the, conventional religion for people to believe that they are in touch with God and serving God, because on comes Anjum Chowdhury and says he knows what God's will, do this and you are serving God. And that is something to which we, you know, it's all very well being an atheist, but we have to answer these questions, why young people are going off in a mad hat way, allegedly serving God, and killing everybody else except themselves. So, Steve, I think you will get an answer, but you won't have answered the question as to why it really happens in the first place. What do you say to that?
Well, it's hard imagining you could be doing God's work by killing people, whether chopping their heads off or shooting them in the head or anything else, Rodney. I think the situation today is that the economic conditions in the Western world, especially across Europe, East and West Europe, and certainly in America, are so dismal for millions and millions of people that the frustration just builds and builds. And I guess it comes out in different ways for different people. Most people don't want to run off halfway across the world and join ISIS, whether they're Muslims or anybody else, but it can show up in all kinds of behavior that's counterproductive and really harmful to the people engaging in it. But again, you see what's going on, immense poverty, social benefits disappearing, permanent wars being waged, NATO countries in Europe and America. And what does this do for ordinary people in these countries? It does nothing. So again, they need to have outlets for their tremendous frustration, and it comes out in different ways for different people. Even the extreme example of joining killers, ISIS killers, Islamic State killers.
I'm going to disagree with you on one. I think that then you say that how do they think it's God's work when they're killing people? But the message, the underlying message that they get is from my country and your country all the time is that they can go to war and they can destroy, and they're doing it for something called democracy or the West or something. And you look at the, I mean, it's a theme which you explain very well, Steve. The underlying message is that going out and killing can be done for someone's belief, etc., etc., because our governments are doing that. Steve, we're running out of time. Just want to turn on one, which is the recognition of Palestine. The UK, I think, since I was last on with you, passed a motion favoring Palestine. The French may be about to do that in their parliamentary institutions, and I find that quite remarkable, because the French government is one of the most, has always been one of the most Zionist ones in the world. But Sweden has done it, and so at last we are beginning to see some movement. We're towards a solution. But of course, the movement is always now in terms of, oh, let's now have a two-state solution, which is now utterly and physically impossible. But at least some progress is being made, and more countries are waking up to the fact that the situation has to change.
Ronnie, one thing. On the one hand, the Israeli Knesset is about to pass a law. Hasn't passed. It got through a ministerial committee, and it needs three readings in the Knesset. But the Israeli Knesset will likely pass a law that effectively it brings Israeli law to the occupied West Bank and I guess East Jerusalem. And what it effectively does is annex over 60% of the West Bank. This is the law that will pass in the Knesset. That on the one hand, and on the other hand, you mentioned France. I just wrote about France will vote in two stages. I believe on the 24th of November on Palestinian statehood in the lower house, and in the upper house, the Senate, on the 11th of December. And I don't know how that vote will go. A non-binding, just the way the UK vote was non-binding.
Yes.
But I struck a note of optimism in my article saying that, you know, great struggles are won with baby steps. So you get Sweden recognizing Palestine. You get the UK thing. You get the France thing. Maybe other countries to do the same thing. And one day down the road, it won't happen soon, but one day down the road, virtually every country in the world will recognize Palestine as a state. Yeah, even though I agree with you, a two-state solution simply is not workable. And the only ones that will go against this will be America, Israel, and a few Pacific islands that America controls.
Yes, and the Israelis at the moment are, what's that phrase, going for broke. they have suddenly gone for a massive amount of new settlements, taking over hundreds of acres. They're trying to go now for the complete control of East Jerusalem, and highly significantly, Steve, they are claiming that effectively, I think they're going to actually going to take over Al-Aqsa Mosque, on the grounds that there was a Jewish temple there 2,000 years ago, and therefore they've got a right to ignore all intervening history. Now, this is happening because of, as you're getting these moves towards making Israel into a pariah state, Israel is simply going to go for broke, grab it all now, and then rely on two things, an atom bomb and the support of the United States against the rest of the world. And this situation is hardening so fast, Steve, that, I mean, the last few weeks, the scale of Israeli expansion and their moves in East Jerusalem and around that temple, I've been absolutely shocked by the sheer speed of it. But that's because they recognize that right the way around now, the opposition is suddenly going to explode. And so you're now in the bottom line situation, which is Israel is going to use its atomic missiles aimed at the European capitals. It's going to use its army and, if necessary, atomic weapons against anybody else. And they're going to survive in the same way as the Saudis do and the killer Khalifas in Bahrain, just by straight brute force. In their case, though, with the and like the Saudis, with the backing of the USA. It's the end of any sort of morality, but the end game is coming very quickly, and it's going to be a very brutal one. That's my fear in respect of Palestine.
Rodney, I worry all the time about a possible U.S.-Russian confrontation that could lead to a nuclear war, and the surprise may be that if we have a nuclear war, Israel may be the responsible party that launches it. That would be the big surprise, but it certainly could happen, and your comments are right on the mark.
Okay, and just one quick last thing. I always, and I think I've mentioned this before, I always look every two or three days at a website where there is free energy technologies. There's 25 of them, and each one of those technologies has several subparts. And so I say to everybody, cheer yourself up, go and look at the website This Week in New Energy, because if there is a breakthrough in new energy, and there are signs now that there's at least five of them coming through very, very fast indeed, then the world could take the wars for oil would end. The control, I think, ultimately of governments will end. The independence of individuals, of their ability to have some sort of economic income will greatly increase. So if we get depressed on the political front and we get depressed on the overall economic front, let's have a little optimism in our hearts and go to This Week in Free Energy, and you'll see some of the startling technologies which really are coming along, seem to me anyway, coming along quite fast.
Well, Rodney, it's very encouraging to hear that. Maybe it detracts from my wanting to end the program on a sour note. But yesterday I wrote about Ramzia Hoda, a remarkable woman, a Palestinian-American, a human rights champion, a feminist, an activist, an educator, a community leader, just convicted in Detroit. Born in Palestine, convicted in Detroit because that's where she applied for U.S. citizenship decades ago, convicted for not completely reporting on her application for U.S. citizenship, everything that happened in her past, including having been arrested by Israel, arrested on bogus charges, brutally tortured, sexually abused over 40 years or 45 years ago.
Shameful.
In Israel for something she had absolutely nothing to do with, and she refused to confess even under torture until they brought her father in and were going to force her father to rape her and to keep
Shameful.
This from happening. She signed a confession for something she never did, and a U.S. court would not allow all this information about what happened to her in Israel, and the jury convicted her maliciously and wrongfully for not coming clean completely on her naturalization application. And she'll go to prison maybe as long as 10 years, maybe a stiff fine, maybe deportation when it's over. She's 67 years old, and this is an example of gross American injustice. One of many examples, Rodney, of gross American injustice. Ramzia deserves everybody's support.
Indeed, indeed. And isn't it shameful? And this sort of thing goes on all the time, Steve. I mean, I used to honor the USA, but I'm afraid I don't. And I'd like to honor it. It has the potential. It has this extraordinary potential, but and the moral authority has gone. And this, your shameful tale, is one of those examples. But of course, it's multiplied in many, many times over in the way the police and the authorities treat ordinary people now. Okay, Steve. Well, thank you very much indeed. And I hope to be with you maybe in a month's time. And maybe the world will have improved a little by then. But at the moment, apart from the free energy, it's not looking too good.
If it does, Rodney, we'll have an on-air toast for sure.
We will have a special toast.
I absolutely look forward to having you back in December. We're getting into the holiday season, but I'll work my programs around them. I think a couple of my programs fall on Thanksgiving. I haven't checked Christmas yet. Maybe one falls on Christmas. If so, I think those are the only two holidays that PRN does not broadcast, and I think they deserve to have a couple of days off, but the other
they indeed deserve to. Yes,
indeed,
absolutely spending, absolutely enterprising, very humane, working for the positive things in life, and they indeed deserve to have a proper holiday.
Indeed. As a retiree, I can't think of anything more I'd rather do than continue my writing. And if somebody wants to interview
me... You are not a retiree, Steve. I won't have it. You were up, if you've forgotten, either 3 o'clock or 4 o'clock this morning. And I couldn't really pin you as to which one it was. You were probably up all night.
No, I wasn't up all night, but I do keep strange hours at times, I must admit. But I will say I have never been more active in my life, and I've never done anything that I love more than what I'm doing now, Rodney. And I hope that somehow my health can hold out and I can keep doing this for many more years to come. And if I can, when my time comes around, Rodney, I'll simply say to myself, I had a good life, especially in my senior years, and I'm ready to go. And indeed, I hope I did make a small difference. That's what
I
want to do.
You are expression. The great truth is that unless you fight for justice, and you of all people do that, unless you really do fight for justice, then your life has very little meaning. We have to look after ourselves and our family, but then after that, part of you must fight for justice, or frankly, your life ain't worth living.
That's exactly
okay,
right. Fighting for justice is looking after ourselves and our family,
yes.
And people need to look at it that way.
Yes. Indeed. It is fighting for justice is looking after ourselves in a very a creative and positive way. And I hope that my life follows yours, Steve, in the I'm doing the same amount of work now on the same sort of scale. It isn't always articles, but the broadcasting, et cetera, et cetera. And we have to take them on, even though they are spying on us all the time.
Oh, indeed. They don't need to spy on me. Everything I do is completely in the open, Rodney.
Same with me. Same with sometimes I wish they'd know more about me and they would learn a bit, you know. One of the problems is they don't always spy sufficiently.
Oh, indeed. I mean, they can go to my blog site, they can read my articles, they can listen to my radio program, they can read my books. I'm an open book, Rodney.
Yes, yes.
If everybody was like me, the NSA would have no reason to exist.
Yes, it does. Justice has to be. And we do have the specific policies. And if I may just take the last opportunity, binaryeconomics.net. This is much broader, has much wider range of policy rather than the American binary economics. And if I could ask listeners to go to that site and realize that there is a simple way forward. It's slow, it's positive, but it builds up very effectively, and it really is the only way forward to get a free market which works genuinely for everybody and spreads productive capacity, as opposed to the fraud that's going on at the moment, where everybody is being screwed into the ground, and the thing is going to explode.
Yes. Someday the thing will explode, Rodney. The music means we're out of time. It was another wonderful, wonderful discussion. I absolutely look forward to having you back next month.
Okay, Steve. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Rodney. Tune in.
Goodbye, everybody.
Make it a regular habit.